This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process. All right, friends, welcome back to the Transcend Human Podcast and our series, The Transcendent Trilogy. Great to be with you again. What are we looking at today? May 27th, 2024. So here we go. I'm just going to be right up front and own the fact that I lied the last time we were together. I think I said that we would be discussing characters and settings this week, but at the last minute, I changed that. So I started a new book between the last episode and this episode called Story Genius by Lisa Crone, and it's really what's at the top of mind right now for me. Now, I'm not going to do a full review of her book. I'm not even finished with it yet, but it's more that her book kind of called me out on some things, right? It questioned my planning and my plotting style. It really threw me for a loop at first. But the more I read and the more I became convicted about some of the things she was talking about, the more I realized, okay, this isn't something I can just read and pretend I didn't read. I have to implement this somehow into my planning for the story. Also, between the last episode and this episode, I went to New York with the family. Rachel graduated from her musical theater program there. So we got to spend almost a week they're hanging out in the city, out of the city, graduation, commencement, programs, all sorts of things. So much fun. Got to do all sorts of fun things, none of which had to do with work or writing. So somewhere in there, I think it was late last week when I got home, I made the decision not to talk about characters and settings, but instead to discuss some of this content from the book that really has me kind of stopped up right now in my process. Now, like I said, I'm not completely done with the book, but I've read enough of it to know where the train's heading. And I really wanted to touch base with you on it and how it will most likely impact my plotting style or impact the things that I've already got on paper and shift my focus a little bit when I'm plotting and then eventually when I'm writing scenes. So today's topic, internal versus external storylines. Chapter one, external storylines are fun. Chapter two, internal storylines are hard to write or not so fun. And chapter three, which one wins? Chapter one, external storylines are fun to write. So to me, the external storyline is really all I've ever known until recently. When you think about telling a story, especially for a boy, and that may be sexist, but I would say it tends to be more physical, more action, more adventure, car chases, thrilling external events that really keep the story charging forward. And it's not like I think this because I'm illiterate or I'm slow in some way. According to Lisa Crone in the book, Story Genius, this is what kids have been taught for eons of time. At a very young age, in school, kids are given writing prompts, and almost 100% of them are focused on external events, which really requires that the students write about them and then continue to write using external events and actions taking place in order to finish out that prompt or to continue writing from that prompt. And so this is literally me, 100%, with no education in story structure, storytelling. I took English classes, but I wasn't an English major. I didn't even get an English minor. So, you know, these aren't things that would be readily available to me because I didn't go down that road. Growing up, my entire focus was on the external plot within books and movies. Here's just a few examples. Jurassic Park. Dinosaurs are created. They get smart. They get out. they eat people. Some survive to tell the tale. Die Hard. A large skyscraper is taken hostage by a group of money-hungry terrorists, and one man, along with the help of a Twinkie-eating beat cop, foils the plans of the terrorists and saves most of the building and the hostages. Armageddon. When a large asteroid is discovered heading for Earth, a team of crackpots from a drilling company are asked to travel to the asteroid, plant explosives, and blow it up to save humanity. See what I mean? When I look back, there are so many books and movies like that, where all I remember is the external storyline, because it's fun and it's exciting. And that's, at the end of the day, that's really what I remember about those books and movies, is the excitement and the plot line, right? But this is where I start to get confused, because I grew up fascinated by the external, and recently I've read information about the external storyline, even in the story grid, which I talk a lot about. And I feel like I've read in places that there are two ways that you can write books and men make movies, that you can tell a story with an external plot without requiring a strong internal plot. And one of my favorite examples that these people point to is the James Bond series, both the books and the movies. According to these articles or these podcast episodes, 007 has no internal storyline. He is what he is. He's an arrogant British agent, spy, assassin, womanizer. That's what he is at the beginning of the story, and that's what he is at the end of the story. It's an external storyline driven by plot twists and action alone. And they obviously work, right? As they've made, 25 of them? And it's a very successful franchise. More recently, I found the show Reacher on Amazon Prime. Very similar. Jack Reacher lives a nomadic life, traveling around the world with nothing but a toothbrush and the help of kind citizens that he runs into. However, he has a dark past, and he has a skill set that most people don't have, and this typically leads him into some form of trouble or another. He gets involved, he winds up taking down very dangerous people, with or without the help of law enforcement. Jack Reacher is the same at the beginning of the series, and he's the same at the end. Now, I know there will be people who say, that's fine that these books, movies, and TV shows exist, but they don't deserve the success they've found because they fail to follow my rules. That a good story has to have a driving internal storyline, a character arc that changes the protagonist from page one to the end of the story. Again, this is where I'm confused because I see a lot of people talk that way. A lot of the books I've read recently, podcasts I've listened to, and YouTube videos say the same thing, that what really drives the story is the internal storyline, and that the only reason for an external storyline is to act upon the protagonist throughout the story in such a way to bring about the internal change. Wow. So is that true? Do all of these movies I talked about fall flat because they focus solely on the external storyline? Or do we live in a world where it could be both and, where we can write stories with strong external plots and also include a strong internal storyline? If I were to look at these extreme examples, I would probably see them as the following. Like if we were to just do one or the other, an external storyline would be a strong story like James Bond, all action, all day long, no internal change. James is James at the beginning, and he's still James at the end. And then maybe for an internal storyline, if it was only about the internal storyline, you'd have a, let's say, a contemporary fiction story where the protagonist goes from being extremely hateful to extremely loving, simply by walking through life, having conversations with other people, experiencing a few events capable of helping push him or her in the new direction. But no real need for action, adventure, car chases, explosions, science fiction, fantasy, blah, 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 right? But again, this is a very polarizing way to view it, right? As a duality versus a spectrum. Because as we'll find out, it isn't that black and white. We'll talk more about that in Chapter 3. Chapter 2, internal storylines are hard to write. So for me, the exact opposite is true for internal storylines, right? For me, they aren't fun to write. They aren't easy to write. Probably because I was never taught to write that way when I was growing up. like Lisa said, most kids are taught to focus on the external events of a story and not the internal. And maybe I can blame a small bit of that on my gender, like I said. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I should understand it. After all, I went to school to be a therapist, a clinician. I graduated with my MSW, and I worked for a while as a therapist, providing individual, family, and group therapy. After that, I supervised therapists doing the same thing in the inpatient hospital setting. So based on my training and experience, what part of internal storyline shouldn't I understand? When I did therapy, I met with a client for the first time. I got to know the protagonist, if you will, in this initial phase. While working with them, I eventually heard their backstory, either all at once or in, a bit at a time during flashbacks, during sessions. And as the weeks went on, external forces acted upon my client, which required them to make choices. And those choices were hopefully made based on the work that we were doing in therapy. And eventually, therapy ended. And the client was hopefully a different person when they walked out of my office for the last time. What is that, if not an internal storyline, an internal character arc, if you will? They walked into my office one person, and they left changed as another person with a different worldview, at least if I did my job well, and if they were willing to put in some work. But in stories, books, and movies, how does this work? Well, based on my research, this is what writing a story with an internal storyline looks like. If external is looking from the outside in, internal is looking from the inside out. Instead of starting with your external plot and fitting all of your characters into that plot, you determine what your protagonist wants and needs, and the change that they will make throughout the story. Then you allow external things to cause that change. It's just a different way of looking at the story. You can and will have all sorts of external events, but they are added to the story in order to drive the changes in your protagonist, helping them move closer and closer to the person that you want them to be at the end of the story. Lisa Krohn calls this the third rail, the thing that is literally driving the entire story. According to Meredith Bond, it can be summarized this way. Through the plot of the story, the character's actions and what happens as a result of those actions needs to ultimately teach the character that their misbelief is wrong. This is what the third rail is all about. The character's internal struggle to learn that their long-held belief about either themselves or the world is wrong. Now, according to Krohn, this is mandatory, right? This isn't just a nice to have. This is mandatory for all stories. Every single story needs the third rail. Again, I'm a little confused about the whole James Bond thing then, but we'll leave that alone for now. So this is what the internal storyline is all about. Lisa believes in this so strongly that she took a job in her local school system to help teach kids how to write this way. According to her research, kids have only been taught to focus on external events in order to write stories. Writing prompts are all external, like this. If you woke up and the moon had disappeared, what would happen next? An external event that calls for more external exposition about external things that may or may not happen in the future. According to her, you rarely see a writing prompt set up for the third rail. Something like, June is an angry little girl. What would it take for her to see that about herself and be less angry? Sounds a bit less exciting, right? But if your story has exciting events that happen to June, and over time these events move her from a place of anger to contentment, then you have the makings of a great little story. In her book, Krohn helps us walk through this process of what she calls a story blueprint that's based on the third rail. Like I said, I haven't finished the book, but so far, here are the steps that I've read about. Step one, determine the what if. So this is really like my big idea. It's the initial idea for the story. And it tends to always be external. Like, oh, what if terrorists take over a skyscraper and try to steal bonds from the CEO's vault? But this is the first step in changing things over to the internal storyline. So based on my understanding of the what if, here's my attempt based on my alpha protagonist. What if a man, mourning the loss of his marriage and struggling to find purpose and meaning in his life, was suddenly asked to lead a task force charged with researching a device found below the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt, a device that led to the discovery of other devices made out of elements that suggest our planet is connected to something much bigger than us, a connection that provides the ultimate purpose and meaning to the lives we live and the struggles we face. Now, there were elements in there about external events, but can you see the shift toward the more internal? It lays kind of a foundation or a groundwork for the protagonist's character arc. You start with the internal struggle that he's facing. So in this case, my protagonist, my alpha protagonist, Jordan, is really struggling in life to find purpose, to find meaning. He's kind of given up hope of ever getting back with his wife. There's just a lot of negative things going on in his life. And so internally, my plan is to move him from that to a much more purposeful and meaningful existence, if you will. So that's kind of the behind the scenes of that character. Step number two, determine the who. So who is my protagonist? And this is really thinking through the backstory, right? What your protagonist brings into the story on page one. So here was my attempt. Jordan enters the story in a state of deep depression and addiction after losing his wife to divorce. He's an educated man, top of his field, and yet none of that matters without his wife. He's lost hope and doesn't see any purpose or meaning in life any longer. He doesn't date and rarely goes out. So it's a start, right? It's something that can be added to before starting the book. Step three, the why. So these are the things driving the internal struggle. Lisa calls this the dueling internal duo. So what the protagonist wants, the desire, and the misbelief or the lie that keeps him from getting there, which is his fear. As these two things go back and forth throughout the story, the tension builds and the plot thickens. So here was my attempt at that based on Jordan. So Jordan wants his old life back. He misses his wife and wishes that he could rekindle their marriage. He believes that she is the only one and that without her, fears that life isn't worth living. Because of this, he's unable to see the good things all around him and the higher purpose that's just around the corner. So that incorporates the thing that he desires, but then also the fear that he has about never getting his wife back. And probably the lie in there is that he can't have a good life without getting his wife back, right? That's something I have to flesh out a little bit more as well. Step four is the worldview. So according to Lisa, you need to plant the reader directly inside the protagonist's head as the events unfold. Being there allows the reader into the protagonist's point of view. You see what they see, you hear what they hear, you don't think what they think, but hearing the protagonist struggle to figure out what's going on and what to do about it. Step five, the first scene. So this is where you're asked to write your first scene. And this scene is really about the moment in time when your protagonist's mind shifts, when that misbelief takes root in his or her brain. From this point on, this misbelief will have colored your protagonist's thoughts and decisions. It kind of becomes a filter through which they see everything in the story, right? And that's how your protagonist enters the story, is with this filter in place. Step six, turning points. So at this point, then she asks you to come up with a bunch of turning points for your story, basically just ideas. And most of these are probably external storyline events, right? So these are external things that will happen that will help move your protagonist in the right direction, basically forcing the protagonist to make difficult decisions, but decisions that will eventually create that internal change that the story is all about. So she says to come up with three or more, pick the best one, and then write a scene for that turning point. Step seven, create the plot line. So this, you can kind of see where this is going, right? We started with a bunch of internal stuff, and now here we are in step seven, and we're just now getting to a plot. Whereas my original plotting that I did for my novel is all external. Like, this is where I started. I came up with this plot line that I really wanted to use, and then I was fitting characters and settings and all that stuff into the plot. So it's just looking at it from a slightly different way. So according to Krohn, next you develop some ideas about the global plot line for your book. Come up with a list and then select the one that is the best. And you know it's the best because you can check the following boxes. Number one, can this problem sustain an entire novel? In other words, can you build upon this problem over and over and over and eventually reach a climactic level? Does this problem lead into a real-world impending consequence for your protagonist that they'll have to face toward the end of the book? And then is there a deadline? Is there like a ticking clock kind of thing that's part of this problem that could help drive the story? Those are big pieces to an active plot line. So that was number one. Number two, will this problem force the protagonist to make the internal change that you came up with? So as you think through this plot line or this problem, is it something that will help move your protagonist struggling with their misbelief to an appropriate aha moment where they're like, oh, I've been thinking the wrong way all along? And then will the approaching consequence cost the protagonist something emotionally? In other words, when you think about this plot line or this problem, will it eventually force your protagonist to have that emotional change, to realize that there's something going on inside of me that's emotionally incorrect that I have to fix? Next, now develop ticks within that plot line. And so ticks are basically, I don't want to call them scenes, but they're like little ideas that would help move your problem along. So she says, you know, grab 5 to 10 of these ticks or progressive complications. You can look at them that way. Things that force the protagonist to deal with their misbelief and move closer and closer to the internal change that you intend. So you get this list of ticks, and then you decide, you know, which of those boil to the top. You kind of arrange these things in an order that is ascending, right? So pick your weakest, smallest ones and do them first. And then over time, the ticks should get bigger and bigger and bigger and more and more and more intense to help really drive the story as you go. And then, yeah, I already did that one. So that's the last step, is rearrange the ticks so that they grow in intensity. Step 8, develop the novel blueprint. So this is a scene-by-scene progression of the external plot. But of course, it is driven by the internal struggle with each external event triggering something in your protagonist. So at this point, Krohn gets really practical, which I love. She gives you a template called a scene card for each scene in your book, which includes the following: scene number, alpha point, which is really the external event, the cause and effect element that is required to keep the story moving. Next, a couple subplot lines. So, you know, every scene will have an alpha point, but then there may also be some subplots that you're working through, right? So you're able to document which of those subplots you're working on in that scene as well. Next, you have a grid with 4 squares. The top left square is the plot cause. Top right is the plot effect. So you have, when it comes to your external, your plot, you have a cause and effect thing. The cause is what happens in the first half of the scene, and the effect is kind of the consequence or what happens after the first half of the scene. On the bottom left, you have the third rail, which is why it matters. And then on the right side of the third rail, the realization. So bottom left, why it matters. So why what happens in the first half of the scene matters to your protagonist, given their misbelief, given their goals, given their agenda. Why does it really matter? And then bottom right is the realization. So this is the box for the internal change that happens in the scene, right? So it's the change that your character will undergo in that scene, and the change that it will have on the protagonist if not in the scene. So let's say this scene is about some of your lower level characters. It doesn't matter that the protagonist is not in the scene. You need to think through the concept of when this scene happens, whatever comes out of this scene, eventually it needs to have an effect on your protagonist. Whatever happens in that scene, eventually your protagonist will either feel the pain from that scene, or they'll learn about what happened in that scene and it will affect them in some way. So this realization requires a change in plan, right? So the protagonist's next move is typically a reaction to the previous realization. In other words, every scene that you have ends in a realization, and that realization needs to spur some change in the direction of your protagonist. And so that's why at the very bottom of this scene card, there's a little section that says, "and so." And that's kind of what this is getting at. So you have this scene happens, and so what must happen next as a result of this scene? This needs to be a very concrete, action-based event, something very specific that the protagonist will need to do next as a result of the thing that just happened in this scene. And that's it. That's it for the scene card. I love that. I love that she got very specific. And then as you're writing your book, you can literally create these little scene cards for every single scene in your book. If you want to flesh this out before you actually write your book, then you have an entire three-ring binder, let's say, with all of these scene cards in it. And how she describes it is there will be some scene cards that the only thing you have on it is the alpha point. So you know this thing is going to happen, but you have no further details other than just that. But what you can do is you can keep adding these scene cards to your three-ring binder, and that allows you to mix and match, to move them around, to kind of fit them into your story the way they need to be fit in. And then once you have everything lined up, then you can go back through and start adding detail to some of those scenes. I'm not going to get super detailed into her process, but she does have a process of folders where ideas live in one folder, and then as they get fleshed out, they get moved into another folder. And then she has certain ways of doing things where she creates a scene or she creates an idea, and then that gets put in a characters folder. I'm assuming so that as you flesh out a character or as you're writing about a character, you know, you have additional ideas that are in that character folder to make sure that those things get into the book as well. So if you're interested, grab the book and read those details, but I'm going to kind of keep this higher level. So that's it. That's about how far I've gotten in her book. It's not the end, but this is a huge chunk of it. I'm not really sure how she finishes up the book, but probably just more detail about the plot line and really getting your scenes in order correctly in order to flesh out the rest of the book. But maybe I'll do an update next time if I finish the book and just kind of follow along with that, finish things off. So like I said, very different approach from the story grid methodology, which I started with. Although as I look back at the work I did with story grid, it's not like StoryGrid completely discounts the concept of the internal storyline. They have lots and lots of things to say about the internal storyline, internal change, things like that. It's just, I think I probably kind of glossed over that stuff when I read the StoryGrid because my mind was so focused on the external that I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. Yeah. So there'll be change in some of my characters. That's fine. But I just discounted it. So to read this book, I mean, it was just hard to wrap my brain around because her focus is 100% internal. And then you're just throwing in external plot lines to help make that internal change. So it's just a totally different way of looking at writing. So, but very interesting. And let's see here. Yeah, I mean, my my outline, my plot right now, my plotting has been mostly external. So if I were to switch to this internal third rail focus, it would take a lot of work. But in a minute, I'll talk about how I could potentially incorporate the two. So I'm sure I've mentioned Mike before on the podcast. Mike and I hang out every now and then. We get coffee and we talk about life and we talk about our WIPs, our works in progress, because we're both interested in writing and we're both struggling through our first draft of our first project. So we both have big ideas and we've kind of jumped in and written a few chapters only to get stuck and then wonder where to go next. But the other day we were hanging out and Mike finally got up the courage to call me out. He said, maybe you should stop doing all this research and reading all these books and just start writing again. Because it seems like the more you read, the more changes you make to your outline and the more confused you get. And all of this just keeps you from writing your story. Ouch. I know, right? Don't you hate it when somebody says something like that? You want to start defending yourself and then you're like, wait, but they're right. And you're just stalling for some reason, right? Maybe out of fear that you aren't good enough, you're not going to measure up, fear that you'll never finish your project, fear that you just haven't found that correct way yet to write it, and you're not sure if you will ever find it. And the more you read, the more confused you get, right? Ultimately, that's probably where I'm at. As an Enneagram 1, I'm a perfectionist. I have a fear of failure. I have a fear of people viewing me as incapable or incompetent. So the harder I work at finding the silver bullet, the less chance there is of something bad going on or something bad coming out of my work, right? Well, maybe on some level. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for preparing yourself, for being proactive, for learning your craft before you just dive right in and make a mess of things. But at the same time, there's also a line in there somewhere that you shouldn't cross, a boundary that you have to set so that you don't just keep researching for the rest of your life. So you have to figure that out, right? That's really where I'm at. I have to figure out when enough is enough and then just start writing. Chapter 3. So which one wins? As I've said, I'm still a little confused. Before this book, I assumed that there were two ways to write. I can just do an externally driven story, or I can do an internally driven story. But after this book, I'm starting to see that if you really want to tell a great story, it really needs to incorporate the two. And you really need to start with the internal storyline first, and then add the external events in to drive the changes you want to see in your protagonist. So what does this mean for my story, right? Like I said, I have a pretty detailed outline already, mostly with external events driving the scenes. So does that mean I have to go back through every single scene and make it about the internal change in the protagonist? Or am I overthinking it? Could I just go into each scene knowing that I'm documenting external events and I also need to be aware of the fact that my protagonist will deal with these events in a way that suggests there is an internal change happening? I have no idea. But there has to be a way to do this so that I'm not completely rewriting my entire outline. I guess the best way to put it is this. Regardless what I have in my outline as a scene description, I can probably just change my focus to the following for each scene. There will be an external event, part of my main plot and subplots, and an internal change to my protagonist. And because I have multiple protagonists or high-level characters, I'll need to make sure that each of them have an internal storyline of some sort as well. But to finish things off, I wanted to bring up two more illustrations, ones that I believe are great examples of the way that I'm hoping to go with my story. So first off, I talked about James Bond being the quintessential non-changing protagonist, but that's not entirely true. It probably is, actually, of the first 20 movies. But when they brought in Daniel Craig as 007, something changed. Instead of the films being one-off standalone movies where 007 is the same at the beginning and the same at the end of every film, this guy came in with a backstory. There were flashbacks to us for us to understand him better. Then he grew to love one of the women that he interacted with, a woman who eventually lost her life, thereby changing his forever. Throughout the movies, he struggles with the physical pain and the loss of his normal accuracy. But this wasn't just in one movie. It was carried as an ongoing storyline, an internal storyline, for the next four movies. At the end of his five-film marathon, he took one for the team. Not only did he save the world, per usual, but he also kind of laid down his life for these people that he had come to love. Now, this isn't something that your traditional 007 was going to do, right? The first 20 movies were the type of James Bond who was doing everything for himself and his country, more so for himself. So this is a huge change in the overall dynamic of the 007 protagonist. And it adds that internal storyline in the movie series, which traditionally was just driven by the external. Second, and this is one of my favorite all time, is the Jason Bourne series. So to me, it's another great example of a series of books or movies with high energy, tons of action. And on the surface, you might just want to lump it in with the legacy James Bond films as an externally driven story. But when you look closer, you see how Jason Bourne goes through an amazing internal character arc throughout the movies. He starts out with amnesia and has to slowly gain back his memory with little flashbacks and by following clues that he finds to unlock even more information and memories about the man he was prior to the amnesia. During the series, he has to come to terms with the fact that he was a killing machine, something that he actually signed up for, something that he appeared to be okay with back then. But at the same time, now there's this internal struggle about right versus wrong. He was changing. He was wanting to be better, wanting to be a different person. But the external events kept forcing him back into his old life. He developed a romantic interest, which was a huge change from his previous life. Similar to James Bond, relationships were not part of the job, as they would just keep you from being at the top of your game. As the series continues, Jason becomes more and more upset about the person that he was and the organization that he worked for. And eventually it became his life's mission to take down this organization, probably to, in some small way, pay for the things that he had done for them. As you can see, another great example of a story with both high energy external storyline, but then woven together with an amazing internal struggle within Jason Bourne. So it's comforting to me watching these films because I think that's what my story can be. Yes, there will be a lot of energy inducing events, right, to drive the narrative. But at the same time, I need to keep working on my alpha protagonist story, right, his internal character arc, so that it can be the third rail, making it a more well-rounded story. Again, I use the term alpha protagonist because my story is an epic adventure with numerous settings, multiple character groupings. So it kind of suggests that there needs to be multiple protagonists. And from everything I've read, in scenarios like these, each additional protagonist must have their own internal storyline, a character arc that will change based on the decisions that he or she makes. And these decisions should eventually bubble up to the alpha protagonist, ultimately impacting his or her decisions and the events that he or she faces in the story. Daunting, to be sure, but it's the direction I need to head. I think it will be helpful to flesh out the what if, the who, and the why elements for my other protagonists in the story, or my other high-level characters in the story. This way, as I write, I'll be able to keep those internal storylines in front of me as I write each scene. I'll focus on the alpha protagonist, but each of the other high-level characters will still be changing throughout the story as well, and their changes will impact my main protagonist's life. So let's land the plane. Friends, as always, thanks for joining me. So fun to be here. I hope this whole discussion about external versus internal storylines was helpful. If you're a writer or if you're thinking through that creative process, I know this was super helpful for me, just thinking through it from both sides and really trying to make a decision before I start hardcore writing on really which way I want to go. So I think I'll leave it there for now. As for next week, I don't even know where to go next week. I mean, we could do characters and settings, or at this point, depending on when I really finish this book and really dive into start writing, we may start talking about the first few chapters of the book, but we'll have to see. For now, everybody, have a great week. And as always, keep transcending human.